Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. We've got an exciting one for you guys and something a little bit different than what we usually share with you. I want you guys to think about sometimes you're on, you're on LinkedIn, you're on Instagram, you're on Facebook, you're somewhere and you see just a hilarious ad. You see it pop up on the side. Maybe it's a video, maybe it's even just a still and you're like, man, I wish I could do an ad like that for my company. And that's exactly what we're going to talk to you about today. We're going to talk about how to use comedy to drive brand awareness. So I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about today. Let me tell you about our two guests. So they are both professionally trained comedic actresses, and they started making comedy videos just for fun back in 2015, which started out as a passion project and quickly turned into a career when various brands and businesses started approaching them for custom video content because they like their content so much. Although content creation now is no longer just a hobby for them, they both still bring that same sense of fun to every single project that they tackle, leaving their clients with something truly unique. And they handle every aspect of production from ideation to editing. They're just a one-stop shop for all of your video content needs. Shelby Dash and Christina Clifford, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
Cool. I'm really excited to dive into this. But first of all, I just want to hear, so you're professionally trained. What does that mean? What is this? Tell me about that as a little bit of context.
Well, we've been taking acting classes and improv and stand up for the last 10 to 15 years, I'd say. I went to school for musical theater and then came right out to LA and dove into all that and did some improv work in New York as well. And
very cool.
I think pretty much the same for Yeah, we both have degrees in theater and acting, and we've both been, before we started doing this together, we were working professionally as actresses. So yeah, that's kind of where that comes from.
Very cool. Well, that's close to my heart because I also come from I did a Bachelor of Fine Arts in theater, same thing, did the acting thing. And then I also think it kind of lends itself to the sales, the marketing, the whatever world. So I can totally relate to that.
You can tell.
you can tell. cool. So let's talk about it. So you've made this career out of making these funny videos. What a dream. So tell us about how you... Tell us about that. Tell us about using comedy to drive brand awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we both come from the background of sort of creating social media comedy videos just for fun. That's how we met. That's how we started working together. So when we got into the branding, our focus is always on the consumer and what they're watching and their point of view. So we always want to make sure we're making an ad that is something that, viewers want to watch. They want to share with their friends. They want to share it with their family. So that's going to be free marketing for our clients. And that's going to drive their brand awareness without them even trying, really. And we've also talked about how a lot of times if you see a brand really taking a risk with their work and really going for the comedy and getting outside the box, that gives you a certain respect for the brand that gives them kind of a cool factor that's a little bit intangible. So we always like to strive for that when we're working with brands that are open to it.
Yeah. And the funny thing about comedy is it just draws people in. I know for myself personally, if I'm watching TV and I see something that's a little exciting, a little out of the box and something I can relate to, then my ears perk up. I pay attention. I am kind of like, who are they? Like, what's that brand all about? Mm-hmm. And so we really try to come at a relatability angle because that is the cornerstone of comedy. And it's also, every product is solving a problem. And when you talk about problems, there are so many ways to attack that in the comedy world.
Yeah. Well, let's get into some of those examples. You guys have a whole bunch of, kind of classic comedic tropes that you employ when you're making these videos. So which are the ones that you guys think work best in this context?
Yeah. So what we've done a lot is we have a spokesperson that has a very strong POV, someone a little heightened of a character. And we feel like that works really well because you're able to get all the things that you need to get out with the product, but also do it in a fun and interesting way. For example, one of our favorite videos that we've done for a cat litter company is all about taking the cat lady and turning her into a cat goddess. So we really see the difference between those two, and we really see the fun, heightened perspective of the cat goddess mm-hmm. and why she loves this product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other examples of that would be like the allspice guy or the old spice guy. Sorry. The old spice guy, Poopery. They all have, you know, that spokesperson with a strong comedic POV.
Very cool.
Yeah. There's a bunch. We can run through some more if you want.
Yeah. Give some more examples. Well, yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Another thing we like to use is like, we call it personification. So that would be basically personifying something intangible, like a mayhem is a great example of this. We also like to do sort of a big thing small and small things big. So that would be like, if it's the end of the world, it's not a big deal. If you break your pencil, it's the end of the world. So you're kind of inverting that, and they're comedy lit on that.
Yeah. So you see that all the time in sitcoms where, you know, George can't fit into his small coat. He's like, I don't want to go to the small coat. You know, so it's like you see these things, you can notice all these different tropes in comedy if you really just pay attention. And another thing that we pay attention to, and it's the rule of three, which is super important and in comedy everywhere. It's making a pattern and then breaking it, because we laugh at the surprise. We laugh at something that's unexpected. So if you create a pattern and then break it, like same, same, different, or we also call it initiation, repetition, variation. I don't know what it is ingrained in humans, but we just can't help but laugh.
It's true.
That's so good.
There's also like a couple more would be, you know, the opposites attract. We see this all the time where it's a husband and wife, and the husband's the dumb one and the wife is the smart one. And that's kind of a great way to go, because you can have one person deliver all of the product information and get that out. And then you have just the person that just hits those jokes.
Right.
So that's another good way to do it too.
Yeah. And that's very strong with the POV as well, because we see why not having the product is a problem versus having the product and why it's so great. We also love to dabble in this thing called misdirect, where one character is talking about one thing and the other is talking about another, but they think they're talking about the same thing. You see this all the time as well. So there's many more. But I think the biggest one, and the one we really try to tell people, is just going for the unexpected. And that kind of plays into what we call hooks. At the beginning of a video, we want to have several hook options, because at the end of the day, it is not a perfect science. Like, you don't necessarily know what is going to get the most attention or views or engagement. So we usually have 4 to 5 different hooks that the client will test out. And, you know, it's always a surprise to us what's number one.
Truly.
But although the cat goddess, I think the number one for them was the cat lady, like, opening cat food. And it looks like she's about to take a bite. So that one, we were like, okay, that's unexpected. So makes sense.
And that was your top performer there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. So is that just a case of, you know, running, you know, a certain segment of the ads with each of these different hooks and then just waiting for the analytics to come back, and then you turn off the other ones when you can see what works?
Yeah. I mean, that's something that the client usually handles, or if we're working through like an ad agency, they kind of work on all that. But yeah, we always will do at least 3 hooks and then a core section that works with all 3. And then we do like 2 CTA options. One, you know, usually do a website, and one with a code or a special link or something, so that they can, you know, test, like you mentioned.
Yeah. And I think it's great for us. It's also great for the client, but it's great for us because if something doesn't work, it's not like, oh, that take two content, they're no good. They'll find something in that bunch that will hit.
Yeah, absolutely. You definitely can't put all your eggs in that one basket. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Very cool. So let's speak to the listeners that are listening now. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to experiment. I'm going to start trying to make some comedic ads or make some funny videos for my product. What are the steps for brainstorming and developing that idea?
Yeah.
So me and Shelby always like to start off. Well, the first thing we want to do is listen to your client, listen to your target audience, like really kind of put yourself in their shoes and dig in deep on what would be their problems in their life that surrounds what you can solve with your product or service. So we dig into that. And if we're talking to a client, we really, really listen to why they love the product, what their tone is, what their message. So we get all this information first, and then we kind of hide away, lock the door, and just go ham on a brainstorm, just throwing everything at the wall and not editing ourselves at all. And we'll come up with some really dumb ideas and some what we like to call genius ideas. And we'll kind of like cipher through that and pick 5 to 6 that we can pitch to the client. And then we'll see what resonates with them. But if you're talking to somebody who's trying to do their own stuff, that's a little more tricky because you kind of got to just put it out there.
Yeah.
And really see the results, see the engagement and the likes, and also emulate what you like. What's your taste, and why are you attracted to that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So would you recommend, like, you know, you see an ad and you're like, I love that ad. Let me sit down and kind of break that down. Maybe try to see what kind of comedic tropes are being used in that and then try to formulate something similar.
Yeah. I mean, if that is, yeah, absolutely. If you're new at this, I think that's a great way to go. I think it would be helpful too, to maybe pick 2 or 3 that are all very different, but that all really you enjoy watching, or there's something that sparks your interest. Because, you know, when you break it down, you might say, oh, this one is personification, this one has a spokesperson, this one, you know, whatever. And then you can kind of either use elements from each one when you're creating your own ad, or you can pick the one that you feel fits your brand and your product the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we like to say too, to get vulnerable. I think a lot of times hear comedy and they get scared. But really comedy lies in the vulnerability. So if you're just coming from a place of truth, then you're bound to win. We love the Harmon Brothers. That is a comedy duo that we just want to be. We want to be the sisters, the Harmon Brothers.
Absolutely. Yeah. We look up to them. We look up to Good B. Silverstein. So those are probably our two. Yeah.
And they have courses and stuff too, that teach this kind of thing. So yeah, I think the key is to just start.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of those things you mentioned that is a strength is, of course, vulnerability, but for people that are putting this stuff out there for the first time, that can be completely terrifying. Right. Obviously it's a huge risk, not only just to shoot something where you're feeling vulnerable, but then to say like, hey world, this is for you. I hope that it's funny. And that's so tough. So what would you say to people? How do you get over that hurdle, that kind of mental block around that?
Yeah. We talk about this as kind of like almost like a wall of fear. So, one thing that I like to think about is like, if you're hitting that wall and you feel like a little bit nervous, or you feel like you're putting something out that's outside the box, that kind of could be a sign that you're doing the right thing because you're pushing the boundaries. If you're really, really, really not sure if you want to do it or not, you can always share it with some family and friends first and, you know, get their response. If you're worried, that's something I would say to do if you're worried that this could come off, you know, offensive to someone or something like that. I would do that. But otherwise, I would just really push yourself to share it and post it. And I think you'll be surprised with the response that you get. Another thing is like, if you are hesitant to even shoot it because you're so nervous about the response, just tell yourself like, look, I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to edit it. If I hate it, I don't have to post it.
And it's practice.
It's practice. And then you just keep doing it and doing it. And eventually you'll be like, I don't care anymore. I just want to post it. And then people will be like, ah, oh my God, this is so great. You know?
Do you guys think that, do you think comedy is something that you can sort of like work at and continue to hone as a bit of a skill? Or do you think there's an element of it that is, I don't know, you're just born with comedic timing or whatever?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah, definitely every day we're practicing and working at it and trying to get better and better. And we have so much more, you know, so much room to grow. But I think, yeah, a lot of it is if you're not somebody that is into comedy and you don't have an appreciation for it, maybe it's not for you. But if you do, you know, and you like to watch it. And I think a lot of times people are big consumers of comedy and that makes them think, oh, I can just jump in and be funny and do stand up or whatever it is. Yeah. But they don't realize these people that they idolize have been, you know, working at this for years and years and years. So. Yeah.
And Ira Glass says this awesome thing. I don't know if you've ever seen that video where he's like, everybody has good taste. And that's why we need to, you know, think about our audience, but everybody has good taste. And you kind of don't realize like how much it takes to achieve that. So when you're first starting out, like, of course you're going to fail. Like just know that's going to be a fact. Like you're going to fail and you're going to grow and you're going to eventually live up to that taste. If you work at it and really teach yourself. That's why I really think you're so great because she's taught herself so many things. She's taught herself how to edit and we both taught ourselves we have coaches as well, but in terms of the writing aspect. So I think really feel free to try and teach yourself and learn. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a process.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, even the greats like of our, well, not our generation, a little bit older than us, but the ones that we would have grown up watching, you hear the stories of them going up and doing their first stand up and some like between two people late at night, no good reaction, like just feeling like, oh man, that really, it was a swing and a miss. It was not good. Or, you know, auditioning for Second City, SNL, those types of things. And them just being like, man, like, no, thank you. And then those people go back and they go back and they go back and then they break through. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Adam Sandler was one of those classic examples. Like he worked hard and people did not think he was funny, or at least the people he was trying to impress didn't think he was funny for a long time until he finally kind of nailed it. And he's obviously carved out a whole kind of comedic brand that does now sort of resonate with a large group of people. He's captured a whole bunch of different audiences with that. So it's a good testament to like, what was that?
It's a requirement to bomb.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You can't just go in there and nail it. It's just, I think it makes you funnier, right? Because you're saying relatability and vulnerability, like the fact that you've done poorly is even in that kind of a funny story to tell.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So if people want to, instead of building this themselves, they're recognizing they are, like you said, a good consumer of comedy, but maybe it's just not in their wheelhouse. What is the best bet for finding people like you guys and sort of preparing you to do the best job for them, building it for them?
Yeah, I would say for us, it's always going to be easier for us to do our job if your product is in the best shape it possibly can be, if it's really like solving that need and it's a good, solid product. It's also going to be helpful if you know your target market really, really well. Sometimes people think their target market is one thing and it's really not. So if we're, you know, making an ad for a market that's not really right for your product, then it's not going to do well no matter what.
And just being ready to take that risk. And I think a lot of people think they want to, but then when they get to that point, they kind of
tense up,
get scared and back out. But also be willing to invest because it's worth it. I mean, video is king right now. So it's worth the investment. And I think some people think it's going to be one thing and really it's not. So
yeah, definitely.
Right. You mean like in terms of sort of production quality, like put in the extra kind of money so that it looks well put together. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That's definitely, I think, a big misconception. Like, you know, I could just shoot this here and then it'd be fine. Yeah. Like if it's got a good script, it'll be a great video or whatever. And like, you don't realize how even simple things like a color grade, that was always something that was always a big surprise when I would hang out with people that were outside of that world. And they're like, oh, I shot my first music video. It's super cool. And I'd be like, oh my God, cool. Show me. And they'd show me and I'd be like, is this, are we this is what, okay. I'm like, no, I think you should maybe talk about color grading, but it's just things you wouldn't even conceptualize. You're just like, why does it look like it's shot in like the twilight behind a weird building? And it's just, there's all these little things that really increase the production value. And it makes sense that you want to invest in that. You want to kind of put your best brand, your best foot forward.
Yes. I mean, depending on the platform, yes, if you want to shoot something on your iPhone and put it up on Instagram or TikTok, that's one thing. But if you're really trying to go that next step and do like an ad for YouTube or broadcast, then you really gotta pull up those bills. Yeah.
You gotta spend money to make money.
Yeah, exactly.
We're learning as well with our own business. So.
Right.
So do you think that, comedy with, creating brand recognition is right for every type of company? Is there a type of company that should steer clear of comedy? What do you think?
I think you have a good answer for this. Do you remember what you said about this? Do you want me to say it?
Yeah.
Well, maybe if it's, yes, but maybe not if it's for like Zoloft, you know what I mean?
Right.
Or like, a medication, or if it's a charity organization, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Maybe even charity.
But I think you'd be surprised.
Yeah, you would be surprised.
I think a lot of people think, oh, my, this is not my brand at all. But I think you'd be surprised. There's always ways to find that angle.
Right.
There are. That's true. Very true.
Yeah. And I guess, like you say, you got to know your audience. You have to know your target market and everything, but there's also still segments within that market. Like you can speak, there are going to be people that like comedy and that are going to, you're going to stand out to them in that group, even if it's not everybody, and that's okay.
For sure.
Yeah. And sometimes even if it doesn't feel like your immediate first instinct in terms of making a comedic spot, I mean, just think about like all the insurance companies, like insurance isn't funny. People get an accident, but every insurance company commercial is comedic nowadays because it gets attention and it almost adds a levity to the situation. It's like, it doesn't feel like a drag when you think about purchasing insurance. You associate it with these fun ads and it's like, oh, just a part of life. So I guess that would be another example.
Yeah. I think we need to tap into that like software people.
Yeah. And that's who's all listening right now. I'm like, these people that are listening and their wheels are turning and they're like, okay, let's see. B2B
security
software. let's make it funny. Yeah.
Totally. I mean, we're trying to get more into doing B2B stuff. We do a lot of B2C. So
very cool. Have you guys seen any kind of B2B ads that have kind of resonated with you? They're obviously going to be fewer and further between in terms of like a proper full length sort of video ad in B2B, because it's not really the thing that's done. But have you guys seen any funny B2B stuff recently?
Gosh, I'm trying to think.
Yeah, that's a good question. I feel like I personally have not.
No, we are potentially working with someone who is B&B. She's like a consultant, and we did a big brainstorm on that, which is very tough compared to B2C.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to think in a different headspace, because a lot of times that kind of thing can be intangible. But once we dove in, we started seeing the light a little bit.
Yeah. I think we were both surprised by, at first we were like, whoa, this is hard. And then the more we dove in, we were kind of surprised by how many great ideas were coming to us. And we pitched the client and she really loved a lot of it. And it was funny because we had some that were a little safer and then we had some that were like kind of out there, and she really loved the out there one. So nice. There you go.
Cool. Well, I'm going to keep my eye out. You guys stay tuned.
Yeah.
Because you're going to start to see a bunch of these popping up on your LinkedIn. That's going to make you laugh.
Absolutely. Cool.
As a kind of parting gift to the audience watching right now, if they're out there, they're ready to make their first video, what's the first step that they can take today to get that first video, first comedic ad out there?
Mm-hmm. Just take out a piece of paper, old school style, take a pen and just start writing anything and everything that comes to your mind, almost like a free write, but for your consumer. So just go and see what comes up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, if you're kind of torn between, do I do this myself? Do I hire someone to do it? If you do decide to even just start out by yourself, like it's only going to inform you about the video making process. So when you meet with someone like us, you're going to understand everything that goes into it, and you're going to understand the costs, and it's just going to help you communicate with your, you know, videographer or your producers all better. So all the better is what I was trying to say.
All the much better.
Yeah. All that much better. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Shelby, Christina, thank you so much for joining us on the Predictable Revenue Podcast. If people want to learn more from you, if they want to get in touch with you too, how can they do that?
Take2content.com, take two with a two, or you can reach us at Shelby@take2.com or Christina@take2.com. We also have a YouTube. The light just died.
My light just died, but that's okay.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing. Cool. Thank you guys again so much for joining us. And thank you to all of you for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests joining us like Shelby and Christina. We'll catch you again next week.